My name is Axel Meissen, and I hold a position which is called the Chair of Foresight at the Alberta Research Council here in Edmonton.
Axel, you've come to Alberta from the Memorial University. What is it that enticed you to leave Newfoundland and come to Alberta?
Well, in some respects, the same thing that enticed me to go to Newfoundland, namely opportunities. Both Newfoundland and Labrador on the one hand and Alberta on the other hand are really important places, not only in Canada but in the world, because they are creating opportunities for their people to make a better life for themselves, and by doing that, actually setting an example for people elsewhere in the world. So for me, it was very attractive to come here. Well, you might wonder, what do I mean by opportunities? There are the obvious opportunities. Alberta and Newfoundland and Labrador as well have financial resources that make new ideas possible to translate into reality. But we also have certain problems that are important to work on, such as energy for our industries, for our cars, for our houses. And there are many technical and scientific questions that need to be addressed. But there are also other challenges that we have. Here in Canada, for example, the forest products industry has traditionally been a very important industry. It is going through some difficult times, currently largely impacted by the housing situation in the United States. And I'm interested in looking at what are the future opportunities for that particular industry. And the forest products industry basically is addressed to providing shelter for people, for their houses, and that's a demand that will not change, although the nature of the demand may change. It also provides paper, which of course is an essential medium of communications, the internet and other ways notwithstanding. I'm very interested in the opportunities provided by agriculture, because agriculture provides food, and that is yet another key element in all of our lives. And agriculture is undergoing a change as well, and we do recognize that. When I was in Newfoundland and Labrador, the emphasis was not so much on agriculture as it was on the fishery. But many of the issues are quite similar in that respect. So I'm intrigued by working on problems that have a broad implication for people, and I'm interested in working on opportunities that either exist and we can already recognize them, or opportunities that we might be able to create. And hence, coming to Alberta was a very good and sensible thing to do.
You left your position as president and vice chancellor of Memorial University. Now, there you were in charge of you were surrounded by people who think and research. Here in Alberta, you're now in the inaugural post of this Chair of Foresight. So you're going from one thinking position to another thinking position. What does that mean to you to be able to be a staff philosopher or a staff thinker?
Well, I think in both cases, I was and had to be a thinker as well as a doer. So in both cases, there is an intention to take one's thinking, one's insights into the domain of application or deployment. Now, when I was a university president, I had all sorts of administrative duties in addition to my thinking duties. But really, I think what distinguishes one university president from another, possibly, is the amount of time and energy that you have to bring to the thinking part of the portfolio. And at Memorial, I was fortunate enough to spend quite a lot of time thinking about what the university should do, how it should do it, rather than just the administration. Here at the Alberta Research Council, I do virtually no administration. I should say I did enjoy administration because it's one way in which you can interact with people, and that's very important to me. And we all know that administrations have their challenges and their problems, but because there are challenges and problems, it's a worthwhile field to work in. Nevertheless, here at the Alberta Research Council, my job is essentially a thinking job, and then to work with my colleagues here, both inside the council and outside the council, to take these insights into the field of practice so that they can benefit the people of Alberta and people beyond Alberta.
Is this chair unique, or are there other countries or other companies that have this sort of thing?
Well, I think it is unique to have a chair. I think it's actually quite unique to have a chair in an organization that's not a university. Normally, one tends to associate chairs with universities, chair meaning the equivalent of a professorship, essentially. Here at the Alberta Research Council, I think the decision was made quite consciously not to call it a vice presidency or something like that. You wanted to want to distinguish it. So in that form, it is special. It is also special here because the chair of Foresight reports directly to the president and chief executive officers of the organization. Now, since I came to Alberta, I have sort of inquired as to who else is doing Foresight work and where it's being done. And I'm actually quite surprised how many people are involved in Foresight work, and now how many people actually have the word Foresight in their job description and in some cases in their titles. I mean, we had a meeting just yesterday here of people in the Edmonton area who are interested and involved in Foresight, and it's about 20 people. In Calgary, it's a similar number. So I would venture to guess that in Alberta, there's probably of the order of 50 or so people, mainly in government, I should say, who are engaged in Foresight work. In industry, the work is typically called strategic planning, and in some governmental organizations also called strategic planning. But it means that in Alberta, if we took the public and the private sector together, I think there's probably several hundred people who are really trying to think about what should we do in order to deal with issues that are either emerging or will still be there in future. And that's fundamentally what Foresight does. And maybe I should talk a bit about what Foresight is, because it's not all that well understood.
Well, what is Foresight?
Well, Foresight is basically a systematic way of looking at the future. And it fundamentally consists out of three stages. The first stage in Foresight work takes a close look at what is. What's the condition in the forestry industry, if you wanted to take that as an example? What is impacting on the forestry industry today? And also it starts to look at what are the trends in the forestry industry. So it's kind of stage one. Stage two, you ask yourself the question, where do these trends take us to if they just evolve naturally, or where might these trends take us to if we were to intervene, if we were to do something that is different, if we were to conceptualize a different way, use a forestry example, of using wood and different wood applications and than what we are doing now. And the third stage fundamentally takes those insights and translates them into actions, where you say, I understand what the situation is today. I can see, as a result of the second stage, how the future might evolve and what I might do. And these are the things that I will now do. Oftentimes, these things are to do some research, sometimes of a scientific nature or a technical nature, sometimes of a market research nature, and where you also will then put into place, if necessary, demonstration projects, where you test products in the market, where you get the feedback from people who use these products. And then you have opened up a new set of opportunities, or if you've coped with a number of problems that you currently face. The foresight time frame is really quite important to take into consideration. Normally, the foresight process looks at time frames well beyond a five-year period, rather than what should you do next year in relationship to what happens next year in the marketplace. But you look further out. So you would ask questions, what's the long-term prospect for paper? What's the long-term prospect for wood? Sort of five to... And now the distant time frame depends, but I typically look between 5 and 30, 40 years, something of that nature. And as you look in the future in this way, you can position yourself today. And that's really what it is about, positioning oneself today to anticipate, take advantage of what will happen in the future, and to make things happen in the future. So many things that are going to happen in the future are not driven because there are demands, but they are driven by people's imagination. I look as an example, or use the example of cell phones. Many of us have cell phones not because we must have them, but they are instruments that are very convenient. And the market essentially has been created around convenience, in some cases, pleasure, to communicate with others, something that didn't exist in the past at all. And when one looks at the early literature on cell phones or personal computers or devices of this kind, often the markets were deemed to be very small because they only focused on what people needed rather than what people wanted. And if you add the want to the need, and the initial devices are often driven by the need, that's clearly accepted, then the markets can become very, very large. I mean, who would have thought 20 years ago, 10 years ago even, that almost every school child would carry a cell phone? Almost inconceivable. And yet, that's the way it is today. So we've created something that didn't exist at all before.
You're just a few months into your new position. How do you set your agenda?
I try and do it in two different ways, and there's no textbook way of doing it. My agenda is set in part by what is the Alberta Research Council currently working on that is deemed to be of considerable and long-term importance to the province. And secondly, I ask myself the question, what should I think about the Alberta working on in the future, even though we're not currently working on it? So it kind of divided into those two parts. And as part of the first, for example, I work on issues related to water, and I am working on issues related to the oil sands in the broad sense, and in the petroleum sense of the word. And I did that together with the with John Maduro's, the president's concurrence, because not only are these issues important, but it also gives me an opportunity to get to know my colleagues here in the Alberta Research Council, and to get to know people in Alberta, because that is what they're working on right now. And that is clearly of great importance to them. And my task there is really to develop some insights that either don't exist at all or only exist there in kind of a vague, slightly obscure form, and bring them out much more clearly and much more sharply. And I can comment on that in a moment. The other aspect is to look at subject areas that we are currently not working on and yet may turn out to be really important. And through the recent Jasper Innovation Forum, I got some encouragement and some insights as to what that might be. So let me just give you one area that falls into that category of new things to work on, and that really relates to drilling and drilling technology. Drilling as applied to the oil and gas industry, to the minerals industry, water increasingly, but also with a particular focus on the Arctic, because lots of exploratory work will have to be done in the Arctic. Much of it involves drilling. And as you think about that work in the Arctic, you also have to think about how do you get all the equipment into the Arctic. Drilling equipment tends to be heavy. But we have similar issues in Alberta itself. Sometimes you want to drill in areas that are environmentally very fragile. You don't want to disturb the land, and yet you have to get these great big drilling rigs on site that normally require a well-paved road. So you do it in limited periods of time of the year when the ground is frozen and the disturbance is minimal. So while drilling technology is important, there are the issues of deployment, logistics, and you can take it one stage further. How do you deal with people who live in the area, who have concerns that are not related to drilling? How do you integrate all of that? And it's a rich set of questions that this field provides. In Alberta, we are drilling currently about 15,000 wells per year. That's an awful lot of holes, a lot of drill rigs in different places, affecting many people. The exploration in the Arctic will increase, and it has special issues with respect to access and with respect to climate conditions, of course. So that would be an example of a new area that we might look at.
You mentioned the Jasper Innovation Forum. Why did you set that up?
We set it up, and this wasn't just my initiative, with the objective of bringing together a group of innovative thinkers to look at some issues that are of high importance to our province and to regions of the world beyond our province. And the objective was to look at these issues and then to try and find some approaches to dealing with these issues. So it's not just problem identification, but it's starting to look at problem solutions, if you wish. After some considerable deliberations, we arrived at the conclusion that we should focus on three broad subject areas: water, food, and energy. Each one of them is, in fact, large enough to be the focus of an entire forum. But we deliberately wanted to stay away from just one of them so that we wouldn't just have experts in water or just experts in food come together. And, of course, there's a connection between these three different areas. So we invited innovative thinkers. Ultimately, it turned out to be 57 of them, approximately half of them from Alberta, another 30% from other parts of Canada, and the remainder from outside Canada. Men and women, young and old, experts in their fields, and some who are really generalists. Included an artist, for example, Wendy Wecko, who is from Jasper. Was there Peter Gaffney, who is an expert in the energy area. We had Alexander Trudeau, who was a filmmaker there. We had some very bright young people join us as well, because the demographic aspect was important. And what we did in the forum is we had some opening remarks from some experts who identified what some of the important issues were around water, food, and energy. And then we had a discussion on these important aspects from the participants' point of view and what could you do about them. It was a 3.5-day forum, and let me go into sort of the fast forward on this. And what did we find that we didn't really know beforehand? We found lots of things that we knew beforehand that were reinforced, but that wasn't the really interesting aspect. What we found was that both, well, in all three areas, water, food, and energy, the issues around waste. It's quite remarkable how much food is wasted between the point of time when it leaves the farmer's field or the greenhouse and it arrives on our plates. Spoilage occurs not only because of delays in transportation, but because of climatic conditions, because of infestations, etc. So all sorts of waste associated with that. In the case of water, maybe the term waste isn't quite right, but a lot of water is lost. Much of the water in Alberta is still used for irrigation. And a very high percentage of the water that we use for agricultural irrigation evaporates and is lost, wasted, if you wish, in that way. In the case of energy, likewise, we generate electricity from coal, typically, in Alberta, but there are losses on the transmission lines. So losses or wastes are a common element that we encountered. The other problem that we encountered is in all three cases, the issues with respect to storage, food storage, water storage, and energy storage. And we clearly discovered that our current system of providing food, energy, and water, which is largely the just-in-time system, is quite fragile if unforeseen developments occur. May that be a hurricane, a flood, or some other kind of intervention. And it creates a great deal of disruption, which is not only local, but global. If we have a disruption in the oil supply from Nigeria, for example, it ripples certainly through the financial markets right around the world, and in many cases the oil doesn't arrive in time and creates at least temporary shortages. So we discovered this kind of connection, and of course it then raises the question, if that is so, and you can do research on how you minimize water losses or how you minimize electricity, energy losses on power transmission lines. But it also raises the question, are there other ways in which we can live where we sort of fundamentally overcome some of these problems? And that led us to the development of the concept of microsystems. Not entirely sure that that's the right term, so let me describe what we mean by it. If you think about a microsystem as a community, maybe a community of 5,000 people or so, what could we do in order to support that community so that we minimize issues of waste and minimize issues of storage? Well, what you start to think about then is to have that community that uses and reuses its water, grows much of its food for itself, and generates much of the energy that it uses within the community. Now, a community of 5,000 could not typically generate enough energy within its own confines, but if you think of that microsystem or micro-community, maybe as an area that's sort of 20 kilometers by 20 kilometers, in other words, has a hinterland, then it becomes possible to grow a substantial amount of food for local consumption. It becomes possible through solar, wind, and other means to generate the electricity that you need, and that would be important. That doesn't mean that this community would be disconnected from the electric grid or from the water supply system, but it would draw on the provincial electric grid and the provincial water supply system to a much smaller extent.
You're moving from looking at not just products and technologies, but also the way we organize society and essentially social values. Yes. How then can you take all of that, put it together, and come up with something that there is some accountability for in the future that really could be worked on?
That's a good question. And I think the normal response to this is twofold. You try and anticipate what this is. You try and think it through. But there's really no substitution for demonstrating it. So I think we will, as we pursue this, and we have initiated this work now, we will try to conceptualize a community of this type. What would it look like? what would we have to do, what would be the benefits, what would be the drawbacks, and have we in fact captured the key issues here? Water, food, and energy are only three elements, while important for a community, are not the only important one. The other one that comes very, very quickly into the picture is, of course, employment. Right? If you think about a small community of a few thousand people, if you want people to have employment in that community, and if it doesn't sit near a mine or an oil site, how do you generate employment? Is at least as big a question as how you deal with the technical issues. So things don't divide neatly into boxes. There are these boxes, but they're all connected. And that's the challenge. And that's what we will look at. And we will try and provide some really practical approaches, not just generated by researchers, but by people who would, take that example, live in that community, developers, business people, students, healthcare workers, all the people who provide the necessities of life and enable that community to make a living in a global world.
Do you plan on having future innovation forums?
Yes. The idea is to have additional fora. The first one that we held was very far and wide-ranging. And we might run the next one in a more focused way. We may just take the subject of microsystems and look at that as opposed to some of the other things and work that concept through to the point where we are ready to do a demonstration project. But I think periodically, maybe every 3-4 years, we need to step back and ask the more general questions. And I would be really interested in asking more general questions that relate not just to science and technology, although this was the impetus here, but to look at some other things that are important and also provide opportunities for us.
What are some of the other things that you're working on?
Apart from the forum and some of these technical areas that I mentioned early on, I'm working on developing, together with others in Alberta, a rigorous capability to do foresight or future kind of work. We have a community of interested people here, probably a number in the order of 100 or 200, who really look at questions of the future and what we need to do now in order to position ourselves. So I'm trying to create a network of people who are becoming appropriately proficient in foresighting techniques and methodologies so that they can apply that to their own work. The other thing I'm working on, and this is more broadly based, is really the goal of helping Alberta position herself as a center of creativity and innovation in the world, whereby virtue of our actions, the kind of research that we do, the kind of demonstration work that we do, the kind of policies we have, where people recognize from all around the world that Alberta is one of those places where there's high creativity, high degree of interest in shaping the future and in being innovative. Why do I do that? Well, I do it partly because that's really interesting to do, but there's a very practical dimension to it, and that is if we are recognized as being a highly innovative place, it will keep our creative and innovative people here, and it will attract creative and innovative people from other parts of the world to come here. And when I speak about innovative people, I don't just mean people who have PhDs or you can be creative as a small businessman or a businesswoman. You can be, and in fact, we have lots of evidence to that effect. Be creative as a farmer, as you provide particularly new kinds of foods, or as you provide foods in different ways. So this notion of innovation isn't one that's tied to laboratories or doctoral studies. It can permeate society. And one way, of course, in which it manifests itself is through the arts.
How do you see innovation then connected with the arts?
Well, I think innovation, if you don't ascribe to that term a strictly technical meaning, permeates the arts, both in terms of performing and reperforming written music, as well as creating new music. And that's not all that different from the sciences and technologies. If you have a piece of machinery, you can put it to very good use, like a surgeon does when she does an operation and has a special tool. Or the surgeon can think about a new instrument or a new piece of machinery to make her work better, more effective, and helpful to the patient. So innovation is based on ideas, trying to create something new, make better use of what we have. And that is something that we encounter in all of our walks of life. No matter where we work, whether it's in the arts or elsewhere. Now, in the arts domain, by and large, the emphasis is very strongly placed on creativity, and it is extremely visible. In the case of the mechanical or scientific world, that isn't always as evident. But if you're a good student of the scientific and technical world, you'll arrive at the same conclusion that creativity really makes the difference.
Well, if you look back to your own childhood and upbringing, what is it that married the arts and science for you?
Well, I was born into a musical family, so I had that good fortune because both my parents were professional musicians. So that answers part of your question. I was not born into a family where there were engineers, which is what I had become, although my parents were very encouraging in me pursuing a career in science or in engineering. I think they leaned more towards engineering than to pure science because as musicians they were quite practical and applications oriented. But they essentially let me choose my own path, and I found engineering was the right kind of outlet for my interests and for my talents. And I chose chemical engineering for a rather odd reason in retrospect. I chose it partly because, well, I chose it to a large extent because it was at that time the most comprehensive of engineering disciplines. Because it included the mechanical aspects and the physical aspects, but it also included the chemical aspects. If I had to make the choice today, I probably would have become a bioengineer because it includes the biological sciences as well, and better understanding and command with respect to the biological sciences than what I had was able to get as a chemical engineer. So I guess I was striving to be a person who was a generalist, who wanted to be involved in more than one narrow field, and chemical engineering really appealed to me. And the way I then practiced it is I basically chose research projects that not only were broad in scope, and much of my work was in the petroleum area, but also broad in geographical expression. So I did a lot of work with people in South America and the Middle East and in Asia because I always felt engineering was closely related to people, and I was interested in different cultures and working with them from different parts of the world.
What do you see as being some of the other issues that people are struggling with or that should be looked at and that you could look at through your position?
Well, let me take some examples. I think people in smaller rural communities look for access to opportunities, and how we can give them that access remains to be seen. We do have now the technical capability to provide courses and coursework and educational materials, but that by itself is not sufficient, and it may not even be efficient. So I think that's something that we need to think about in the broader context. I think people are very concerned, and rightfully so, about health, not only when they encounter major health problems, but also how to maintain their health and how to maintain their health as they grow older. So I think we need to think about what kind of communities, what kind of houses, what kind of facilities do we want to provide to people as they become older and as some of their capabilities start to lessen. I'm approaching age 65. My eyesight isn't quite as good as it used to be. I'm always puzzled when you try and open a container of pills or a jam jar. The print is so small, it's virtually illegible. And there ought to be a better way. Cell phones, which I mentioned early on, are increasingly becoming smaller. And I find the buttons are much more difficult to operate. I don't really want a particularly small cell phone. I'm quite happy with a larger one as long as I can operate it. Now, I recognize that the largest market for cell phones may be younger people, but there is a significant number of people who would benefit from having cell phones that they can use more easily. So I think there are opportunities here to think about devices and technologies that really meet needs of people in a very personal kind of a way. I remember the time, maybe 10 years ago, when my mother was quite elderly and she was by and large at home, and to get a television channel changer that had large buttons was nearly impossible to do. And yet much of her life revolved around television. So if somebody had said, here is a large channel changer that you can read or you can feel, it wouldn't have mattered to me whether this cost $20 or $100, because I knew it would have given her great pleasure, because it would have given her access to another part of life. So I think we can be very imaginative and creative around that. I think we have really good opportunities in Alberta with respect to food and nutrition. I mean, we are an agricultural province. We by and large make commodity agricultural products. My dream, sort of my vision, is that in the future, we will not only be able to market Alberta-produced foods, but food from the Peace River country or maybe from a particular farm in the Peace River country. And it will have a brand, it will be recognized for its quality, and that's what people will want to have. Now, to make that possible, you have to get that product from wherever it's produced onto the plate of the consumer. And that's a real challenge, because you have to do it in real time, because most of the food is perishable, to come back to that topic. And how do we do that is the challenge. But that's well worthwhile working on. And if we have a healthier, more wholesome lifestyle, that's good for everybody.
Are you going to do your thinking on your own, or are you inviting the public in to help you?
Let me put it this way. One of the really nice aspects of doing this interview and you writing the article based on the interview is that people will not only listen to what I have to say or what I'm thinking or read accordingly, but it gives them an opportunity to think what it means to them and for them to give me some of their ideas. And they may relate to what I'm currently doing and what I have said, or there may be something quite different. And I would really welcome an opportunity for people to let me know what motivates them, what they are thinking about, and how we can build a more interesting and even better Alberta and set of communities in Alberta in the future. I'm especially interested to hear from people in smaller communities and in rural Alberta, partly because their voice is often not heard just because they can't be in the major cities. But particularly through my work in Newfoundland, I have learned that people in small communities often see the picture more clearly than people who live in large communities, because they are inundated by so many possibilities and so many influences. So if there are people in smaller towns, people young or old, doesn't really matter, who want to share some of their thoughts with me, I would really welcome that. And I'll make an effort to integrate that into my work, and if the opportunity arises, to enter into some discourse with them.
Thank you very much, Axel.
You're very welcome.